cap four, and then doing anything that was complex over $5 million.
So you can't help them with a below $5 million, even when they're willing to pay for the contract?
We don't have the FTEs from you to be able to pay the other half of that, which would be the current law.
Oh, so current law allows them to pay 50%
of what it costs. 50%, the state pays 50% if we can enter into a contract. The problem historically to me with the industrial appraisal, the way it was done before you went to the five cap four, is that in effect different counties provided different types of property for the department to administer. There was no ability for us to respond and getting those into categories that would be most efficient for the state to appraise, because we, you know, again, the five cap four theory, if we appraise all, let's say, lumber and wood products firms, mm-hmm. we will gain economies to scale by appraising all those. If we appraise half of them and they're scattered all around and scattered in different sizes, we get less economies to scale out of it, and the counties have none. They have half of them, but yet maybe only one county is appraising one and another county is appraising three. And it becomes very difficult for them to do that.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that we haven't funded the other 50% of the industrial appraisals for 1 to 5 million industrial properties?
Yes, I'm saying that mm-hmm. as part of it. But under this measure, in effect, all that would come out of this account, out of this money, mm-hmm. the 5 to 1, and then the general fund would not have to be paying any of that. Mm-hmm. The general fund would still pay, in effect, for the five cap four accounts, which is what you took over to fully fund last legislative session.
And so, this session, too.
Yes.
So under this program, Richard, the 1 to 5 million industrial appraisals will be done by the state?
Yes.
With this funding?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And all they have to worry about is below $1 million.
And all the other, all the mass appraisal mm-hmm. property.
Mm-hmm. Okay, please continue. We are now on page 7.
7. You have the industrial at the top, and again, the schedule of phasing that in, the compliance, and its phase in of individuals at the bottom. And then you see, in effect, the total budget for this first biennium on page 8, then, showing $1,000,004 in personal services, $244,000 in services and supply, and $200,000 in capital outlay. Now, because it's phased in, then we've included the second biennium, which is the next sheet. And it then shows you the full effects when it's fully operative, which would be the second biennium.
And what does SPAD stand for, Richard?
Okay. Pardon?
Do you want to tell us what does SPAD stand for?
Jim, why don't you?
Madam Chair, that stands for Supervising Property Appraiser D. The D is the classification, but it's supervising property appraiser.
So that's a person?
Yes.
There are two FTEs there. These are, if you look under the FTEs, you'll see the number.
Supervisor or property appraiser.
Those are in the industrial expansion. As you add those additional accounts, we'd be adding two teams of additional industrial appraisers to be able to pick up those 609 accounts or 7 accounts between 5 million and 1 million.
Madam Chair.
Ken?
If this question's not timely, then perhaps postpone it to the end, but let me ask it. And also, I was out of the room, so I apologize if you've already discussed it, but looking for the worst-case scenario on revenues, that you get a reaction from property taxpayers such that delinquencies are dropped dramatically and that the ceiling and the floor kick in, but you're only able to take a total of $3 million out of that. What happens, Rich? What's the worst-case situation, and what do you do in that situation in terms of the work that you plan to do?
I mean, which would we... that still would allow, I think, in the second biennium for you to probably fully fund the industrial part and the compliance part. I think it's built to try to do that, try to provide that floor so that you still can keep that process moving and getting it back into cycle.
Is there a dollar figure attached to that worst case?
Madam Chair, the dollar figure that we would assign to it would be between $13 and $14 million per year, which would provide close to our estimate of a biennial cost of $2.8 million for both the industrial and the compliance portions of this bill.
Madam Chair, we're going to take the committee's time now. I'll work on this after the subcommittee hearing in order to understand that.
So you're saying that if the delinquency accounts decline, the revenue from the delinquency interest rate income will decline also, and how is the program going to be funded?
Well, there is the existing 12%, and the program can tap into the existing 12% up to a total of $3 million. Now, that 12% existing revenue source also will be affected if there's a drop in delinquency rates, so that there be a county general fund loss there and a program loss. And Mr. Kinney shaking his head now.
Madam Chair, the $3 million, of course, is a statewide figure, that it would be a statewide $3 million that could be shifted into this fund.
What is that $3 million?
If the revenues from this increased interest drops below $10 million, then the fund can move into the other interest up to a maximum of $3 million statewide. By our estimates, it would take more than a 50% drop in the number of delinquent taxes existing now before we would go below that $3 million. So we really don't think that we would at any time go below that $3 million. And as far as the shift to the taxing districts, it's very minor. The $3 million statewide on over $2 billion in collections is very minor, Madam Chair. So I don't think it would have effect in that respect. And we don't believe that we would have more than 50% of the taxpayers that would pay up their delinquent taxes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Representative Hanneman, did you have a question?
The penalty for being out of the room part of the time is asking something that's already been covered. The 50% sounds reasonable to me. The 4 percentage points, it seems to me, wouldn't cause a 50% or more than 50% reduction there. Earlier in the discussion, I asked what the department thought a substantial minority was in a percent of those who can't pay compared to the substantial minority who are people like me who prefer not to pay right on time. I think that was a matter of record earlier anyway, when we discussed your budget. We stay behind a couple of years. There are other things to do with the money. I'm one of the people that's in that substantial minority. A moment ago you mentioned impact on the county general fund. That's where, or someone did, and that's where I get very sensitive. can you very quickly tell me how it would be possible to impact the county general fund?
Well, the only way you could, you can't technically impact the general fund.
Richard, will you identify yourself?
I'm sorry, Richard Munn, Director of the Department of Revenue. Under the bill, you're increasing, again, the interest rate, mm-hmm. And then you're taking one quarter of that, and it's going into this fund. Now, if, in effect, delinquent, and let's say you make a distribution of that in the first year, you're fully operative, and let's say something like $15 million flows out to the counties with it. Then let's go to year three or four or five, and let's say your delinquent accounts decrease, and now one quarter of the delinquent taxes, instead of bringing in 15 or 16, and the total value of accounts stays the same, maybe you're not going to bring in $15 million, maybe you're going to bring in 14. Then that's going to be distributed now out to the counties. That's the only way, and now so the counties have potentially less in their general fund from this fund. I think you have to make a lot of assumptions to arrive at that point, which I think is going to be pretty unlikely.
You said less, but is that less than under the current system?
No.
Or less than anticipated this act?
They still would get more than the current system.
Okay.
It's only that they wouldn't have growth from one year to the next out of this system.
Yeah, right. I wanted to make sure about that. I assume the counties wouldn't be on board if there was any significant chance of loss to any of the general fund, because there's a lot of folks in this House and Senate who don't know the general fund situation in some of our counties, and because some of us share in timber revenues and some of us don't, and we're in such a varied financial situation around the state with ONC and all the peculiar situations. The five counties in my district certainly wouldn't have been with this bill in the House and Senate revenue committees if they thought there was a loss from the status quo of the current revenues.
Yeah, there could never be a loss from the current amount of money.
Right.
This is only would add money, and then the question would be, would that money grow or change from one year to the next? And it generally will grow.
But in the event the delinquent accounts decline because people don't want to pay this increase in interest rate, and if it dropped more than 50%, and that is the time when you may go into general fund to subsidize this program. Is this correct?
No, you're going into, in effect, the rest of the the interest account, the other part of the delinquent taxes, to help fund the rest of this program. And that then is coming out of the monies that are distributed to all the taxing districts within the county.
Mm-hmm. So that's the general fund part of it, the regular 12% interest income.
The regular 12% delinquent interest payments that are made now go into the unsegregated tax account and are distributed out to all taxing districts within the county.
Along with their
levy itself.
Levy, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but so
that's
now,
the general fund part of it.
Yes, that'd be the general fund for schools, cities, counties, special districts within that county. The counties are a very small portion of that total.
And Madam Chair, let me clarify.
Okay.
Shorthand was very inappropriate. When I was speaking of counties, I meant all taxing districts that would share. That if the program simply resulted in this dramatic loss, then and the revenues drop below $10 million, then the program could dip into the revenues that all taxing districts currently receive from the 12%, up to a maximum of $3 million for the program. So that there is a dipping into existing revenues if the $10 million minimum revenue from the new delinquent rate is not achieved, is my understanding. And it's not these comments are not made as a criticism of the program, but I think the record needs to be really clear.
Well, I think you do need to understand that if all those conditions happened and that occurred, then in effect something less than 0.15% of the revenue of a district would be affected.
And Madam Chair.
Before I recognize you, Paul, why did you say 10 million, Ken? They were giving us the figure of $12 million revenue from this increase in interest payment.
Let me refer you to the second paragraph of the AOC memorandum, and that's where my question came from. Second paragraph, number one.
Is it 10 million or is it 12 million?
Madam Chair, Jim Riddell, AOC, the floor, subfloor concept to which Ken refers is the floor is the $10 million. The $12 million that you're thinking of is sort of soft estimate that the Department of Revenue has of revenues that will be generated from this single source after the three-year transition period. The annual amount flowing into the fund will be about $12 million under the Department of Revenue's estimate. If it drops to $10 million or below, then this floor-subfloor concept that's described in the second paragraph kicks in. Mm-hmm.
Then you dip into a general fund. What was that, Henry?
Well, I was just thinking that as this program gears up, in 2 years when the session meets, we'll see better what the income is from the 12 to 16 shift and the revenue from the transactions. And even though there's a 1997 date, I would think that the counties would be back here with a great deal of concern about revenue loss on the county side. And if I understand how things historically go, it'd probably be the State Department of Revenue that would be adjusted to some shift in mechanism, percentage points or dollars somewhere there.
You do have a process.
Richard.
I'm Richard Lund, sorry. You do have a process where all this first fiscal year of the next biennium, it'll be preparing for, in effect, the second fiscal year, which is the first year you make a distribution to the counties.
Okay.
And then you will be in session midway through that first year and be able to help evaluate then for the really first full biennium of the program operating, which is not 1989-91, but 1991-93 biennium,
yeah,
when really the program would be up and running fully.
Mm-hmm. Richard, was there, are you finished?
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Was there any discussion about the equity or inequity of increasing the delinquent tax interest payment? It just seems to me that the burden of financing this program is going to be borne by a lot of people who can least afford to pay more payment. They are the ones who can't afford to keep up with the property tax payment, and you're going to ask them to increase interest payment to finance this program, which is needed by all. Was there any discussion in the two school finance committees regarding this question?
Yes, actually there was. Maybe Jim can respond.
Yeah, we'd like to hear the the discussion. Can you summarize that for us?
Jim Kenny again. Yes, there was considerable discussion in both the revenue committees on that. We made a study with the help of Multnomah County on the profile of delinquencies that exist in that county and also in some of the other counties, which I don't have that those sheets with me. But in Multnomah County, of the total accounts, and there's approximately a little over 52,000 accounts, delinquent accounts in Multnomah County for last year. Of those accounts, there's approximately 4,600 accounts that are commercial properties. And just to give you an illustration, for the property value up to $500,000, there's 42,000 accounts.
I just remember Senate session starts at 10 o'clock. Maybe this is a subject we can start tomorrow.
House does too, but we spend so much time on opening remarks and remonstrances, I never get too excited.
The Senate is always waiting for a quorum. So do you think this is a subject we should go into tomorrow?
Sure. Mm-hmm. I'll have this available for you tomorrow.
Yes. Do you want to give us all a copy of that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I will.
So we'll come back to this tomorrow. And in the meantime, will you contact the Douglas County assessor who has written letters of opposition to this? And I have received letters from other groups who oppose this measure. So perhaps you can let other people know. One of the letters I received is from the Older Women's League or association opposing the tax on delinquent accounts.
We can talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah.
There was a letter from a Lane County group, and I think they were confused about the bill initially.
Okay, so we'll hear this bill again tomorrow.
Madam Chair, before you close, how do you want to schedule Representative Bauman? Would you like to
schedule her first?
You want to schedule her first?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
What bill is it? Okay, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
We still have 500 fewer employees in Lane County government now than we had 10 years ago. And we expect that to continue in the future. Lane County has a compliance study that was completed by the Department of Revenue. We lived up to the request from the Department of Revenue and did increase last fiscal year $600,000 more in assessment and taxation. We are still, however, not up to where we should be. We're in a phased compliance study. We're being asked to provide additional money in the future, and our ability to do so is very difficult. I also wanted to mention that Lane County, again, along the lines of trying to live up to our obligation, passed a real property transfer tax ordinance, an ordinance that would provide money for assessment and taxation and other land management functions in county government. The real estate industry collected enough signatures to put that on the ballot, and eventually it failed. So we have been trying to do what the state law says, trying to raise revenue to fund assessment and taxation. The assessor's budget has been reduced, but so have all budgets within county government, the 500 employees less that I mentioned to you as an example of that. There were approximately 155 employees in assessment and taxation in 1979, and there are approximately 87 now, a significant reduction. We'll never go back to 155, but we do need additional to become in compliance with state law. In summary, I'd like to mention that I guess I disagree with the assessor from Douglas County. I think while we understand we have the responsibility and the obligation to finance assessment and taxation, the ability to do so in Lane County and in most other counties, perhaps with the exception of Douglas County, is nearly impossible to do. Even taking the political heat of passing a real property transfer tax, we're prevented from using that revenue source to help us with assessment and taxation. That political heat, I think, will be there for any Board of County Commissioners who chooses to increase a fee, raise a tax, to finance assessment and taxation. And last comment is that I think the protections that are now in existence in state law provide some help in the equity question that was mentioned. For example, the senior deferral program that only has a 6% interest that is due on that the deferred amount can help senior citizens who may be unable to pay their taxes. They can participate under an existing state program. That does help with that equity question and help seniors who may have problems in paying their taxes in a timely manner. So I think the balance, the delicate balance that has been reached in this compromise is the best way, and on behalf of my Board of County Commissioners, I would suggest that and encourage the subcommittee to pass this bill to the full House and Senate. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Johnson, how many accounts do you have in your county?
I think my assessor can probably answer that better than I can, ma'am.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Gangle, Director of the Lane County Department of Assessment and Taxation. We have 140,000 accounts in Lane County.
So if we ask if you consider putting $10 per account, you would get $1.4 million?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. And what amount do you anticipate from the formula used in this program?
Madam Chair, I believe the figure was $1 million, but Jim Kenney, I think, can verify that.
Is he figuring it out?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And maybe you can come up and give us the figure after you have it. Do you have something to tell the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Gangle?
Yes. A couple of things I want to mention. Jim Johnson, the county administrator, outlined the problem that we face in Lane County. And we're just
to be safe, I'd like to ask you to identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Jim Gangle, the director of the Lane County Department of Assessment and Taxation. When I first went to work for Lane County, it was in 1977, and we were doing appraisal in Springfield at that time. We are now just beginning to start back into reappraisal over there in Springfield. It's been that long since we've been back over there and doing reappraisal. And so as a result of that, we've had values out of compliance and out of equity. In their compliance study, the Department of Revenue found properties with as much as $20,000 difference in value. And that could result in a difference in property taxes of about $500. Madam Chair, I have the information. It would be between 1.2 and 1.3 million would be Lane County share.
From the formula used in this program, you
yes.
anticipate $1.2 to $1.3 million.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
We are now just getting back into compliance primarily because of the increase in the ONC money that's come back into the county. I wanted to address the problem, the concerns about funding and the number of properties or number of accounts that go through the foreclosure process. We sent out last year a total of 27,000, a little over 27,000 delinquent notices. That's just right after the May 15th posting time. So right after that, we sent out 27,000. What we find is that people tend to carry those properties out there for a period of time and then drop them off. I have some information about the foreclosure process. And if you look at, as people go through time and we hit different landmarks in the foreclosure process, they drop away. They pay off those properties. And that indicates to me that to some degree, at least, or a considerable degree, they're making a choice about either paying or not paying their taxes. I don't have the start figure, excuse me, the starting figure of how many delinquent notices we sent out, but in for the 86-87 foreclosure year, at the start of the foreclosure process, we had about 4,200 accounts. That was right before we did our publication. After publication, or actually on the publication date, we had 1,000 accounts. So roughly 3,200 accounts dropped out as people decided to pay off those taxes rather than to continue into the foreclosure process. Continuing on, there were 619 accounts that went into judgment, which is another step. And of those 619, there were actually 168 that were foreclosed on. So we did foreclose on some properties. My experience at Lane County has been there have only been two properties that we foreclosed on that have been owner-occupied, one of which we got out of the foreclosure process. A woman had been abandoned by her husband, and we worked a deal with a bank. The bank wrote her a loan, and we helped facilitate that, and so she stayed out of the foreclosure process. Another one we have, another owner-occupied we have, I've talked with the gentleman's attorney who was foreclosed and actually deeded to the county. And this person told me that, the attorney told me that he thought the gentleman had the money to pay, but as a matter of principle, he didn't want to pay the taxes. So that's been the extent of my experience as far as owner-occupied properties going into the foreclosure process.
Two out of how many?
In that one year, we foreclosed on 168 properties,
and
that would have been correct. And there would have been, my guess would be around 20,000 that would have started in the delinquency process. And it just, as time goes by, people pay off and drop out, and pay off their taxes and drop out of the foreclosure process.
Madam Chair,
Representative Henry.
I assume that the bulk of the 168, or the majority of them, were unimproved properties?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanneman, those were primarily subdivision properties. As Lane County went into the recession, there were several builders that were caught out there with large subdivisions, and these were primarily subdivision properties.
Those were platted, but services had not been extended, or the lots had not been improved in most cases?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Hanneman, that's correct. In various degrees. Some of them were plats only, in some cases fully developed, but no improvements.
And you counted each plot or plat as one unit?
That's correct.
And not the whole subdivision as one unit. And they were the bulk of the 168?
That's correct.
Mr. Jones, you have a question.
Mr. Gangle,
Is there any measure of the number of properties that are delinquent, because the properties are in the equalization process, that the value is being contested?
Madam Chair, Mr. Jones, I don't have any figures on that. We don't track. You're talking, if I understand your question, people are not paying their taxes because they're contesting their appeals.
Contesting the value.
Contesting the value. My opinion would be that there are very few, that there are some, but that's rare. Generally, people will go ahead and pay their taxes and then wait for the refund. The majority of the people do that.
Well, then, do you believe the increase in interest rate will bring, will cause more foreclosures?
Madam Chair, I would imagine that the increase in the interest rate would probably cause more foreclosure, because it is an increase. But I believe also that there would be more payments paid in the first year, you know, less delinquents, because people would opt to pay their taxes rather than pay the increased interest. I think, though, that the amount that would go into foreclosure completely through the process, while it might increase, would be minuscule. I don't think that particular, the 4% increase would have a significant effect. I think it would, but a very small effect.
Well, if you believe the increase in interest rate will cause people to pay off their accounts more promptly, what percentage do you anticipate that will pay their accounts more on time?
Madam Chair, I don't have that information. I know that the Department of Revenue put together an estimate, but I believe that their estimate was very soft, that the experience is not clear on what that percentage would be.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps this is a question we'll reserve for Mr. Munn also when he comes up later.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hanneman.
Have you been around the Capitol in previous legislative sessions dealing with the various ways to resolve this problem?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanneman, I participated on the working group that helped put the legislation together, and we had lists of different alternatives, 15, 20. In fact, I have the alternatives in my notebook.
Okay. I wasn't going to pursue it if you hadn't been around. I know Mr. Worrell has for a number of years, so I was waiting till he speaks to ask him about the alternatives and why the House and Senate Revenue Committees did not consider those and or did not place those in the bill, and why the Assessors Association opted for the interest rate increase rather than some other alternatives. So I'm especially interested in Kim's remarks because he's had an overtime feeling for it. If you care to, that would be great.
I would defer to Mr. Wells.
Mr. Jones has a question.
Mr. Gangle, have you ascertained if you received the full amount of the estimate of monies coming back to Lane County for administration under this bill? How close that gets you to the ability to fully comply with a six-year cycle? Is it above, below, right on?
The estimate to get back in full compliance was about $600,000 per year. That's the increment we would need to hire the additional appraisers and stay in compliance. This would be more than that. The 1.2 to 1.3 would be considerably more than the $660,000 that we estimate.
Then maybe a question back to Mr. Munn then when he comes back to witness stand, if on a fully equalized state payout for these monies, whether or not the full, I think, $12 to $14 million that's anticipated in terms of collections is needed to bring all the counties up to compliance and to sustain them at a six-year cycle of compliance level.
I'd like to make a quick response.
Mr. Gangle.
We are right now in an upturn in our O&C cycle, or riding the wave, if you will, and we have more money coming into us from the county general fund than we would have had in a period when we were in the trough or in low times. And what I'm very concerned about is what's going to happen 2 to 3 years out with our O&C revenue. Maybe now we're more than adequate, but if the O&C revenue begins to dry up and decrease as we anticipate it will, we'll be back into a situation where this might not even be enough at that time, because that O&C, as it shrinks, is going to draw on the reserves of the county and will affect us.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, when the economy is depressed, even if you go out full force to assess those properties at the full value, people will not be able to pay for those property taxes that you assess at an accurate value. So your delinquent accounts will go up.
Madam Chair, we did experience an increase in our delinquent accounts during the period of the recession that we experienced mm-hmm. in the 80s. But those were primarily among the development type accounts, the subdivisions. Those were the ones where we, by far away, the most numbers. Mm-hmm.
But that's something to consider, that even if you are in full compliance with tax laws, but then your collection will decline because of the depressed times. Mm-hmm. If there are no other questions for Mr. Gangle, we'll go on to Mr. Worrell.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, for the record, my name is...
Wants to hear Mr. Worrell.
My name is Kim Worrell, representing the Assessors Association. I was the Yamhill County Assessor for 16 years, and during most of that time have represented the Assessors Association at the legislature. I'd like to first tell you that if you have questions of other assessors, we have quite a few of them in the audience. We have representing Multnomah County, Linda Alexander and Janice Druin. Representing Washington County, Jerry Hansen, the director. Ray Erland, the assessor from Clackamas County. Don Kirby, the assessor from Gillam County. Joyce Pearson, the assessor from Linn County. Doug Ebner, the assessor from Marion County. And Dolores Glennie, the tax collector from Marion County. The two Jims here from Lane County. Bob Rondeau, the assessor from Benton County. And Oscar Bratton, the assessor from Deschutes County, are all here in support of this bill. I also have a copy of a letter that was sent to the state senators this year with the names of the assessors supporting the House Bill 2338. And the 32 of the 36 assessors are listed. One of the missing four is in the room, and that's Janice Druin from Multnomah County, and she is in support of the bill. The assessors are not totally happy with this bill. If we were, it probably wouldn't be a bill. This bill came out of a committee that was, and it is a bunch of compromises. It's not exactly what anybody would have designed going in from any aspect. It is a bunch of compromises. The interest rate increase from 12 to 16% was probably due anyway, because of the number of people that are currently borrowing the money from the taxing districts at a 12% simple interest rate rather than financing it through a bank. The 16% rate at a simple interest rate is probably fairly comparable to regular interest rates on a compound factor from banks. And it's going to be now a decision for those people that have been borrowing the money from the taxing districts to make the decision whether they want the 16% simple interest rate or their current bank rate they can get from borrowing that way. We do anticipate there will be some speed up in payments, which gives the districts the money faster, gives them a chance to invest it and use it rather than borrow themselves. And it also, I don't anticipate that it's going to increase the number of delinquencies. In fact, I think it will probably reduce the number of delinquencies because people won't be caught in the situation they were caught in the early 80s, where they were borrowing the money from the counties at 12%, and then all of a sudden the times went bad and they didn't have the money to keep up, and I think that caused some of the increase in foreclosures because those people were right on the edge anyway. Most of the foreclosures that are occurring in the state are occurring through mortgage companies, not through property tax foreclosures. I've talked to several assessors, and as far as we know, with the possible exception of the person that was protesting in Lane County, nobody has been forced from their home through a foreclosure process in the last 2 or 3 years.
Statewide?
Statewide. forced from their home.
Okay.
Multnomah County's had some foreclosures on homes in the northeast and the southeast sections where the situation is so bad, but most of those have been deserted homes. Not where a person was forced out of their home, because every county, as far as I know, every tax collector will do their utmost to make sure that they work out something with the owner of a piece of property. They don't want to evict people from property. And I would doubt that there have been very many, if any, cases of actually evicting people from the property through the property tax foreclosure process. Usually works something out. Let the people buy it back for the amount of taxes on a long-term payment, an easy payment plan, something to get them back into a home or let them keep their home. The
Mr. Worrell, yes. That doesn't include the veterans' loan properties, does it? One has been...
No, I'm saying the property tax system. Veterans loans, yeah, there have been many foreclosures in the veterans program and in the HUD programs, FHA programs, private financing programs. There have been a lot of foreclosures, but not, I don't think the property tax system has foreclosed on that many properties, especially occupied properties, owner-occupied. Most of the foreclosure lists that I've ever seen are little tracts that are meaningless. Or as Jim said, they're subdivision lots that are developed or undeveloped and haven't been sold, and through financing or whatever, they just decide to let them go back. I just haven't seen that many where we're actually kicking people out of homes. And I don't think the change in the interest rate is going to hurt that or make that any worse. I think it might make it better. And Madam Chair, you made a comment that the increase in value would increase taxes and cause more people to have problems.
During recession times.
Increasing the values doesn't increase the taxes. Increasing the value changes may change the who pays them, the distribution of the taxes over the entire property tax load, but increasing the values doesn't increase taxes. What it does is try to distribute them properly, where we get all of the homes, all the properties at 100% of value, then everybody's paying their fair share. And if one class of property goes up more than another class, there's a shift to that class of property, the other ones get a reduction. And that's what was happening in the late 70s, is there was a shift to residential properties. And in the late 70s, the legislature recognized that and put variable ratios on the two classes of properties. After the Depression hit, the residential properties dropped faster than the other, and they got back to even again. And we went back to 100% of true cash value on all properties. But the actual increase in value doesn't increase taxes. It just spreads the load differently. The only thing that increases taxes is people voting on a higher levy or the 6% increase on a tax base. So we don't anticipate that changing the interest rate would cause any more, or increasing the value of property will cause any more delinquencies. And I think changing the interest rate, increasing it, may reduce the number of delinquencies. I did get some figures from Marion County. You were looking for figures a little earlier. Marion County this last year had 8.7% of the taxes delinquent. 8.7%. And that equaled 10.25% of the accounts in the county. It would seem that the figures in Douglas County are rather high. But I also would like to mention that the task force that worked on this that Mr. Gangle mentioned is made up of the School Boards Association, the school administrators, the OEA, the AOI, the Associated Oregon Industries, the League of Oregon Cities, the realtors, the home builders, the Department of Revenue, the assessors, the tax collectors. Who else? That's about it. And it was an interesting group to try to work with. The idea of a $10 fee is an idea that the assessors presented to the legislature last session, and it was not politically acceptable.
Talk about that, if you will.
Hmm?
Talk about it, Kim.
Well, the biggest protest in that came from the owners of many small tracts, especially forest landowners. They felt a $10 fee on top of many of those have small tracts that don't pay a large amount of taxes, and adding a $10 fee to every account didn't seem equitable to them. We also talked about, Representative Dwyer has had a bill in the last two sessions that would withhold the 1% of all tax collections from the taxing districts. with the number of schools that are in a safety net situation right now, the schools couldn't afford to lose 1% of their revenues. So trying to take it from the taxing districts was difficult. We've talked about a system where we charge part of the cost of assessment. In fact, that's what the original House Bill 2338 did, would have charged half the cost of assessment taxation to the taxing districts. That would have varied from just under 0.5% in the large counties to up to 2% in the small counties. Again, we ran into taxing districts that couldn't afford to lose up to 2% of their taxes. Politically, it wasn't acceptable. We've talked about almost everything that we could think of. The only other solution that might be viable, and I probably can find out here by requesting it, would be that the Oregon legislature determined that the property tax system is important enough to fund it out of the state general fund. At a rate of $15 a year, or $15 million a year, or $30 million a biennium, we could replace these funds with that type of a fee. That's about the only alternative. We haven't sought, and we have been told that that's not politically acceptable. So we are down to some sort of what you might call a Mickey Mouse type of system of getting it, but it's not something that's doing anything that shouldn't have been done anyway. The interest rate should be raised to 16% to stop the people from borrowing from the taxing districts and to get them to pay their taxes more currently. And this just so happens that that increase in interest is something that the taxing districts are not getting right now. It's not taking anything away from them, and it's something they found politically acceptable, is to allow the interest rate to increase. They'll get their money quicker. It's not going to cost them anything unless we hit the floor-subfloor situation that was being talked about yesterday. And it gets the amount of money necessary to keep assessment taxation going and to bring it back to where it should be.
Why don't you go ahead and talk about the subfloor?
Okay. What the subfloor is, Madam Chairman, is we're anticipating an income of around $12 million a year from the additional 4% interest rate. If for some reason those taxes are paid up much more rapidly than we thought, and there isn't that amount of delinquency, and that amount of money drops below $10 million, the department has the authority to order the counties to withhold a slightly larger percentage of the interest on the delinquent counties, not to exceed $3 million. In other words, they can order the counties to not just withhold that additional 4%, the quarter of the total, but a slightly larger amount, so that up to a point that reaches $3 million. The $3 million statewide is less than 0.15% of the total tax collection, so it's not going to be a severe impact on the districts, and they have agreed to that. But that will not be triggered unless the actual interest on delinquent taxes, the 25% of the interest on delinquent taxes, falls below the $10 million level. And we don't anticipate that happening. We don't anticipate that large a drop. We anticipate some drop with the increase in interest, but not that much.
What do you anticipate the drop in delinquent accounts will be when we increase the interest rate?
Well, I think the department has done a study on what happened when the interest rate was raised from 8 to 12, and there was a slight drop, but then it kind of leveled right back up again and kind of held steady. And again, it was a situation like now where the 8% was a very good rate for people to borrow money from the taxing districts rather than to pay their taxes. And we're back into that kind of a situation now where the 12% is very inviting to do that. And we just need the additional 4% to get the money to the districts quicker anyway.
So what do you think is the probability that the accounts will decline so much that you have to dip into the regular 12% interest income?
I don't anticipate it dropping that much. It was just put in as a kind of a safety net feature in case that did happen and we didn't have enough money to get the assessment taxation program going.
So you don't anticipate...